Well, hello, folks. Welcome back to the Czech blog. I'm excited to have our good friend Jator Pierre here once again. How are you, Jator? This is it's the Illuminati.
That's the Illuminati, and I think things are getting big or something.
That's right, things are getting big. Well, that's good because we've got a big topic today. I'm excited about what we're going to talk about. We're diverging from some of the previous topics that we've talked about, and we're going to talk today a little bit about the connection between emotional health and gut health, or the relationship between your emotions and your gut. And I think this is starting to get a little purchase in the literature, and people are starting to become aware of it and talk about it. And I know for my family, we all know in my family that there's big connection between, you know, your emotions, our emotions, and our digestive system. And so from a personal point of view, I think this is going to be pretty interesting. So thanks for joining us, and thanks for enlightening us today.
We shall see.
It's always an enlightening experience with you, Jator.
I appreciate that perspective. Yeah. I don't always feel like that about myself, but yay.
Yay.
So yay. Yeah, you know, this is a huge, huge topic, and man, it's so vast that I think in my personal experience, it's tremendously, I don't want to say misunderstood. I think there's a tremendous amount of understanding around gut health. You can get a pretty good feel for general themes if you Google gut health, digestive health, etc., on what's current. Small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, FODMAPs, anti-inflammatory diets, 30-day whole food, you know, the whole 30-day resets, what's that, specific carbohydrate diet, GAPS diet, and the list goes on and on and on. And I think, at least in my perspective, there's a tremendous amount of information. However, in my own personal experience, being a human being, we tend to latch on to ideas and then become hyper-focused on the idea itself. So when we talk about gut health, maybe a metaphor would be the way that I see gut health being addressed, generally speaking, is analogous to maybe how a physical therapist might address the knee issue. Now, nothing against physical therapists. I work with them. They're very, very sharp folks. So I'm not knocking physical therapists. I'm just simply saying that when you go into most physical therapists, excuse me for anyone who doesn't do this, and you have a knee issue, the focus is going to be on the knee. The focus is going to be on rehabbing the knee. And what if I was to say that that knee issue is an expression of something else going on? Unless it's an acute injury, I'm playing hockey and someone slashes the hell out of my knee. Okay, so we have a definite cause and effect there.
Yeah.
However, a lot of knee issues are stem from something further up the chain, whether it's a gut issue or a stability issue or a postural issue or a respiratory mechanics issue, potentially a mental and emotional issue, it stems somewhere else. And my perspective on gut health and the information that's out there, generally speaking, it tends to focus on the gut itself and what we should do to address it. Here's the diet to address it. Here's the mechanism of action that's going on underneath that's causing the issue, and here's how we can address it through supplementation, nutrition, etc. And I think that's beautiful. And what I think that is missed, something that we talked about in the webinar that I did for the Czech Institute, is the global picture that, you know, the gut itself is not separate from the rest of the human body. It's not even separate from the brain. In fact, you could make a pretty strong case that the gut and the brain are a singular entity, not separate. And then from there, you can make an even a larger case that the human body itself, inclusive of the gut organs and glands of the musculoskeletal system has no separation. We tend to separate it out so that we can understand it from a mechanistic point of view. However, it's a whole system. So when you look at it, can it be helpful to go in there and address the underlying mechanisms and address it from a very specific perspective? Yes. However, if the issue is driven by something that's happening globally, something in the person's environment, something that happened to the person when they were a child, some mental and emotional stress that's going on at work, you're going to elicit some result. However, you're not going to get a full healing effect because essentially you'll be using supplements and nutrition as a crutch. Not getting to the root issue. And back to this idea that we've talked about before on that Pepper's video is talking about the exposome. And the exposome encompasses every non-genetic influence from the moment of conception to this exact moment in your life. So if you really sit with what I just said, there in that one sentence is a tremendous amount of information held. I mean, imagine every moment from the moment you were conceived to now has an influence on underlying gene expression through epigenetics. And that can have an underlying influence on how your gut functions.
Yeah.
So if we take this, you know, if we look at it, we have the gut, and if we take one thread of the exosome, we look at mental and emotional state. Well, simply said, if you have a mental and emotional issue or unresolved trauma going on in the background at an unconscious level or even a conscious level, that is upticking the amount of constant stress that your body's under. You're getting essentially an insidious stress response. And this is why mental and emotional stress is so important to health and wellness, is because it's insidious. Mm. It is pervasive throughout your whole entire life. As an example, let's take something very simple. Let's say I was mugged. Let's take Batman.
All right. Let's take, always comes good. Back to superheroes.
You got to bring it back to the superheroes.
Yep.
So let's take Batman, for example. So Batman at, let's say, 8 years old, was walking down that alley, and he saw both of his parents get killed. Now, he saw both his parents get killed, depending on what comic book you're reading or what movie you're seeing. He saw both of his parents get killed by a blonde-haired guy who looked kind of grungy, held a gun, and he saw that and experienced what happened. Now, we fast forward through all of Batman's life. It is a pretty good guess that every time Batman encounters someone with blonde hair, he's going to have an unconscious stress response. Every time Batman sees a gun, he's going to have an unconscious stress response. It's pretty interesting to consider. Batman does not use guns. Now, if we don't pay attention to the last movie that just came out.
Yeah.
Not really normal Batman, but that's
right.
Batman at the end of, at the end of his jaded career, for lack of a word. So, you know, again, we use Batman as an example. So if that's true, then Batman is having an underlying unconscious response to unresolved trauma that happened to him when he was 8 years old, let's say. And every time he interprets those in a situation, he's having an uptick in his stress response, and that is facilitating his HPA access. So his hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal, thyroid, gonadal access. Now, why is that important? Well, it's important because if that emotional trauma is underlying and insidious, and he's having this constant background expression go on, and that starts to disrupt his HPA access and cause a chronic stress response in his body. Once that situation becomes chronically expressed, the body will start to release inflammatory cytokines, which are normal. When we talk about inflammation, when we talk about cortisol, my experience is a lot of people make these things bad. They're not bad. as long as we go back to the view of the yin-yang symbol, which we love at the Chick Institute, what does that really represent? One aspect of it is balance. So are inflammatory cytokines bad? No. Are non-inflammatory cytokines bad? No. If it's out of balance, is it not a good situation for the physiology of the human body? Yes.
Yeah.
So if Batman is out of balance, he's having this unconscious response to unresolved trauma from his past, that's releasing these inflammatory cytokines. The fascinating thing about this is that some of these inflammatory cytokines have been shown to directly affect how the gut moves, reacts, and how permeable it is. So Batman performs at a very high level. However, one could make a case that Batman could perform at a higher level if someone was to work with his unresolved trauma and help reduce his stress, which would help to heal Batman's gut, which would then help him perform at a higher level. Because from our perspective at the Czech Institute, stability begins in the core, in the inner unit, in the gut. So if that's inflamed, that, you know, that reduces the amount that the inner unit is functioning due to inflammation and pain. That reduces Batman's ability to stabilize and express power to protect his joints. So is Batman a BA? Badass? Yes. Could he be more of one? For sure. If we were looking at the unresolved emotional trauma, and again, you know, this doesn't have to be something that's unresolved either. This could be, you know, Paul talks about the masks that we wear a lot, and also being as authentic and honest as we can be. That's a huge, huge topic of conversation because, one, in my perspective, each of us can be as honest as we're aware of, right? There's things that we're unaware of, so I can only be as honest as I'm aware internally. So that's one piece. But if I'm consciously lying, I'm consciously masking and hiding things, the interesting thing about that is that if I'm consciously doing that and I'm spending time with people that I'm consciously masking and hiding things from, I have to spend a tremendous amount of energy remembering those lies. And remembering what I've told people, what I haven't told people, who I've told what to, who I haven't told what to. Yeah. And even saying that out loud right now, I'm getting stressed. You know, as a, you know, to be very upfront, this is something that I am currently working on and will continue to work on probably for the rest of my life, is being as honest and authentic as I possibly can, which is hard. It's very hard. And that's a whole nother video we can do.
Yeah.
However, you can see then that why relationship with self can cause trauma, I mean, sorry, can cause stress and trauma in a sense through disconnection from self. And then if we're doing that internally and we're doing that externally to friends, intimate relationships, etc., that's going to just hold an insidious amount of stress response at all times that we may numb out. However, it's still there. It's still influencing us at a mechanistic, very low level in the physiology of the human being. And how does that show up? Well, it shows up, you know, what's so fascinating about the HPA axis and stress and gut health is that it's like trying to grab a slippery fish. It's very hard to do because the symptoms that are associated with gut health, essentially a better question to ask is what symptoms aren't associated with gut health? What chronic disease isn't associated with gut health? What pathology isn't associated with gut health? That's a much better question to ask because then we might actually get one or two things, maybe. Because the spectrum of symptom, disease, and pathology is so nonspecific that you could name any disease, symptom, or dysfunction, and there is a potential association, if not a direct cause and effect between HPA access, how you interpret reality, you interpret your internal reality, your gut health, and how that then opens you up to global chronic disease, chronic pain, chronic issue, etc. And this is, unfortunately, I think a part of me gets a little frustrated. It's continually missed, skipped over, and not not honored. Not honored to the degree that my arrogant self says it should be. Mm-hmm. And one reason I think that is to dive into mental and emotional work as a coach, from my perspective, the coach themselves has to be doing mental and emotional work with a coach. They have to be diving into themselves as well, because essentially that helps to open up your perspective. It also helps to open up your empathy and compassion for what clients are going to bring to the table. And whether this is said or not through word, that empathy and compassion potentially is going to be held in the coach's words. It's also going to be held in the coach's subtle energy field. And when a person walks into that subtle energy field, they're going to have, potentially a higher desire to share things that they've never shared before with anyone else. They might even say, I don't know why I want to share this with you. I've never shared this with anyone else, but for whatever reasons, it's coming up right now. And I feel like this is a comfortable environment to share this. Through them sharing that and sharing a secret, they're already starting to release and relieve a lot of the tension that they carry around in their body at all times. It doesn't have to be that they have to go and confess their sins to the person that they think they've sinned against. However, it may be really beneficial to share your secrets with someone. You know, to use confession as a metaphor to relieve, release, and expose things that you're extremely shamed about or feel shame about, things that you feel extremely guilty about, and things that you're beating yourself up about on a constant basis, whether, again, it's conscious or unconscious, that is extremely relieving to the system, and that starts to bring the stress levels back down. So if Batman would have done some inner work with his inner children, he may have performed better and also well, maybe he wouldn't have been actually such a good superhero, because part of what made Batman Batman was his dark nature and his, you know, his shadow side is kind of what drove Batman to be Batman. So that's also an interesting paradox, right? Yeah. The shadows that we're unaware of also can drive our desires to perform or be or become. Eminem might be another great example. If Eminem did therapy, his music probably wouldn't be, as my biased opinion, awesome as it is. Because he wouldn't have, you know, Eminem's form of therapy is essentially his music. That's him exposing himself and him doing kind of self-therapy.
Yeah. No, this is great because it really brings actually together, I think, a lot of what we've been talking about in previous. And you've talked about these, right? The Peppers interview and so forth. But it really brings together and drives home, I think, why these sort of inner explorations are really so important, especially when you're saying, well, look, if it affects your gut and then from there, it opens you up into any number of different chronic diseases. So all of this inner exploration isn't just about some sort of new age-ish kind of getting to know yourself, right? I mean, there's real serious consequences for either not doing or doing this kind of inner work and getting to know yourself and what your stresses are and how they manifest.
You know, the consequences are vast and as deep as they are wide. And I think that is something that is, you know, that is misunderstood. And I think that's why the Czech perspective can be so powerful, is that something as simple as eat, move, and be healthy, if someone starts to address what's in there, they're starting to address their exposome. They're starting to address their environment.
Yeah.
And, you know, I work with some of the best functional integrative medicine people in the world. And that perspective is awesome. However, a lot of it tends to turn into being allopathic in a sense.
Yeah.
Let's do testing, and then I'm going to prescribe supplements or natural remedies. However, those end up being crutches for the person rather than getting to the root.
That's right.
I think what's missed, in my perspective, is from a lot of health coaches' perspective, I don't think they understand how powerful their position actually is. Because if you can help a person learn to help themselves and address their mental and emotional state and their underlying behaviors, at the end of that, then we might need to do testing. At the end of that, then we might need to do some supplements based on that testing.
Yeah.
Up front, can we do testing and can we use supplements as crutches? For sure. That can be very, very helpful. However, the root is really the person's mental and emotional state, and that drives their everyday behavior patterns.
Yeah.
And if someone is a couch potato, nothing against couch potatoes, I quite like being couch potato myself at times, but if someone is a couch potato and wants to lose body fat, let's say, well, we have to look at what is the underlying mental and emotional perspectives that have created the behavior patterns that that person wants to sit all day, from a physiological level, from an emotional level, from a mental level, potentially from a spiritual and intuitive levels. Those things are all important to us as human beings. And, you know, health coaches currently, if they position themselves right, are primed to explode right now.
Yeah. And I, you know, you're right. I mean, if you look up gut health, right, on and Google, you will get all these lists of supplements, right? So probiotics, of course, inulin, flax, prebiotic fiber, you know, and it gets more and more esoteric as you go along, but it, like salba seeds, right? I mean, and turmeric is huge right now, or turmeric, or however you say it, right? Everything is orange now. It's all orange. And these may, well, like you said, I mean, these may be great things and really nice. You know, maybe they're the kind of little boost you need so you can get your health to the point where you can start to consider those deeper issues. But the, you know, you can take those forever if you don't address the sort of mental emotional side.
Yeah, I know. I think a great metaphor for what you just said is, I'll use a car because I like cars, but you have a beat up car. And it's not, let's say it's a 12 cylinder and it's running on four cylinders. The frame is bent, the wheels are bald, and none of that power in that 800 horsepower engine is getting to the tires. And the metaphor there would be, in terms of addressing gut health, would be, let's not look at the valves. Let's not look at the intake, let's not look at the rest, let's not look at how we're cleaning it, how we're feeding it, and how we're taking care of it. Let's simply slap new tires on it and throw it on the track. That's essentially the allopathic model again, which is nothing wrong with that. However, unfortunately, a lot of integrative and functional people, in my experience, end up taking the allopathic model in a sense, because it's easier. Yeah. You don't have to dive in with people.
And
that's where the health coach fits in, is maybe having a system where you have functional medicine and integrative medicine docs, and they honor how important a coach is, a health coach or a life coach, etc. They know how powerful that is, And they have those people on their team to help their clients, and they pay them a substantial amount because they know how important that is.
Mm-hmm.
And they know for their work to have traction on the track, they need someone who can help them change the underlying behaviors, or else we're just playing games like allopathic medicine.
Yeah.
But what I mean by games is essentially going after symptoms and not going after roots.
Right. Yeah, like Paul says, a this for that kind of approach. Yeah. So as you know, I'm a simple guy, and I always like to try to figure out, you know, how to get started on these these things. And actually, you know, I will say again, a lot of our previous interviews offer great places to start if you want to get to sort of learn who you are and learn what your stresses are and those sort of things. But I was just thinking, you know, how much of a help would it be just at any given meal itself to sort of clear away, like we have talked about this, like electronic stimuli, right? So get rid of computers, get rid of phones, get rid of books, maybe even music and everything, and find just a quiet place and make eating almost like a meditative practice.
My experience is that's huge. Mm. One, it's very helpful to the digestive system. And two, essentially what you're saying is let's take away stimuli so that we can focus on what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at when we have a lot of stimuli, what's required, energy is required.
Yeah.
Energy to intake the stimuli, pay attention to the stimuli, to multitask essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're multitasking while we eat, that energy that we could be directing towards mastication, digestion, assimilation, being present with our food,
mm-hmm.
all of that energy is being diverted to different directions.
Mm-hmm.
And the more dysfunctional our digestive system is, the more stressed we are, the less sleep that we have, the more focus we need to have around, essentially the more myopic we need to become around honoring, wow, my system is running low. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if I'm multitasking, I'm burning a lot of energy out of these different pathways, rather than focusing my energy into my gut and gut healing and digestion, assimilation, uptake of nutrients, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So hugely, hugely important. And something I learned going to Vipassana meditation, these 10-day retreats, mm-hmm. no eye contact, no speaking, no reading, no writing, basically nothing but you.
Mm.
At the times when we would eat, it taught me so much about how unfocused and unpresent I was doing these retreats. And when I would eat, I would actually close my eyes. Mm. And I'd close my eyes, take a bite, and then move the food around, feel the textures, feel the flavors, taste the flavors. And it was such a beautiful experience. And it's something I think that we take, at least in my experience of myself, take for granted. You know, the food that's coming into us, all of it was alive at some point. And maybe creating a sacred space around our eating alone is very, very helpful to reducing stress, paying attention,
mm-hmm.
being present with ourselves and each other. Maybe around a meal, which is a very different experience than having your cell phone here and eating and, oh yeah, yum, 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 yum. If you look at current research, multitasking is BS.
Yeah.
People say you can do it. You can do it. It's just that you have 100%. And if you're multitasking, you're getting 20% here, 30% there, you know, 40% there. You're not getting whatever you're doing isn't getting your full undivided attention.
Right. Yeah.
And in my experience, honestly, probably one of the most powerful things someone can do to start healing everything is a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
That is a trump card.
Yeah. That's great.
Donald Trump card.
Well, I don't know what to say about that part. But
I don't either, but it was fun to say.
Yeah, no Donald Trump comments below, please. Well, anyway, no, I mean, that was great. Those are really simple things, very simple things, right? Get rid of all the other distractions while you're eating, get a good night's sleep, and those things can help, you know, enormously.
This is the unfortunate and maybe the fortunate piece, is that, you know, most of our ego parts are taught to look for complexity to fix what we think is complex issues.
Yeah.
And if we start with this global picture and we get down into all the mechanistic views, it's going to seem highly complex how we're going to address all these mechanisms.
Yeah.
But if you pull back and look at the global picture, what influences the underlying mechanisms that are expressed, it's pretty freaking simple.
Yeah.
Thoughts, breath, nutrition, hydration, movement, and sleep. It's really, really that simple. Now, does it get more complex in terms of how to address underlying behaviors? Yes. Does it get more complex into addressing the mental and emotional state and stressors? Yes. However, those easy first steps can wipe out 90% of issues. And if you still have some underlying issues going on after you have all this stuff in place, well, then maybe it's time to do some testing and look into that.
Yeah. That's great. That's fascinating, the way that, you know, the four doctors interact, right? I mean, essentially what we're saying is, you know, you take Dr. Quiet and Dr. Diet at the same time. And that's, you know, that's maybe that's your answer. But that's really fascinating. Well, thanks, Chitor. That was great. And I like that there's some simple things that we can start with, but I think this was a really important exploration. So thank you.
I appreciate it, man. It's super, super fun for me. And I really love, and part of my purpose, I think, is to share more of this pulled back lens.
Yeah.
Can I get lost in sharing all the mechanisms and all of that? For sure, if we want to do that. However,
yeah,
it's really pulling back and looking at, like, how is the person treating themselves on a daily basis? What are their underlying behaviors?
Yeah.
And back to that Peppers video that we did. How much pleasure? What's their exposome like? How much play? How much pain?
Mm-hmm.
And how much, you know, what is their soil of self like?
Mm.
And all of that creates these underlying expressions.
Yeah. And if you're watching this video, and maybe this is the first time you're seeing us, and I'm sorry about that. but if this is the first time you're watching, we'll link to the Peppers video, because that's a good watch, an important watch. And I think that after having watched this, you go back and watch that one, it'll make a lot more sense.
For sure.
Great. Well, thanks again, Chitor. Let's do this again soon.
Let's do it, brother.
All right. Take care.
Bye.